uncovered wine jars, the remnants of wine in jars at Uruk. And that was our, by far, our earliest indication for the use of wine in Mesopotamia, which until this archaeological evidence emerged, wine was thought to appear somewhere over the course of the second millennium and to be significantly less important beverage than beer. We know that some vines grew in southern Mesopotamia, but there's very little evidence, in contrast to the evidence for beer making, that informs us about wine production in Mesopotamia itself. Most wine, when it appears in our documents, was imported. And we get references to perhaps certain vintages, such as wine from Carchemish, which is in Anatolia, that may suggest wine was identified by specific regions, just as it is today. We have descriptions of red wine, white wine, wine of different qualities. So at one of these royal banquets, the best wine is reserved for the king, and the rest of the guests get a much lesser quality of wine. And also wine of different strengths. Some wine is described as especially strong. Other wine is sweet or very clear. Wine was often sent to a king as a gift, usually from another king, and in turn, the recipient of the wine would give it to his favorite officials. Hammurabi received wine from a ruler of the kind that he himself would drink. So we see that this is one of those luxury goods that kings liked to exchange to help solidify diplomatic alliances or create a connection between them. Assyrian rulers of the first millennium BC were especially fond of receiving large gifts of wine from either provincial officials or from other rulers. Even at the height of its popularity, there's no evidence that wine ever replaced beer as the beverage of choice in Mesopotamia. The 18th century BC king of Mari, Zimri Lim, was justly proud of his ice house, which he had built in his palace along the northern Euphrates. An inscription on the foundation stone of the ice house has been discovered, and it credits Zimri Lim as the builder of an ice house which no previous king had ever built on the banks of the Euphrates. Letters from the previous king of Mari, whom Zimri Lim supplanted, Yasma Adad, had also referred to ice. Yasma Adad was quite the gourmand. He often referred to food and wine in his texts. He was very concerned with his particular diet and making sure he got the best of everything. So it's not surprising that he would also be interested in getting ice to cool drinks or to preserve food. Yasma Adad's father advised him from the city of Assur to give orders to the cupbearer's servants and make them collect the ice. Let them wash it free of twigs and dung and dirt. So the ice was probably collected from a mountain and then brought down to Mari, where it would be stored and wrapped in some way. Yasma Adad's father also castigates him about a lot of other details of his rule, and we'll come to that in a later lecture as well. We know that ice was used specifically to cool drinks. Both wine and fruit drinks are mentioned as being cooled by ice, and this would have been quite refreshing on a hot summer day along the northern Euphrates. Kings sponsored feasts on a huge scale, and this would earn them support among their own people and also impress visitors. The palace kitchen staff was quite extensive because it would have to serve many people on a daily basis and also on these special occasions provide food for tens of thousands of visitors. The palace was always a busy center, receiving envoys, merchants, as well as sponsoring many different craft industries. So they would need to have someone who could oversee its kitchen, the supplies received, and how they were distributed. A woman named Amaduga was the keeper of the kitchen at Mari. Her name appears first during the reign of Yasma Adad, who was so concerned with his tummy and his ice, and she retained her position even when the king was deposed and Zimri-Lim took over the palace.